This episode of China Money Podcast is sponsored by Lehman Brown, a China accounting, audit, and advisory firm, Zuji.com, an online travel agent providing flights and hotels bookings worldwide, Mint.com, personal budgeting and financial management software, and go to Webinar, unlimited webinars for one low rate. Go to ChinaMoneyNetwork.com and click on our sponsors links. Thank you, everyone, so much. Hi, everybody. Welcome to China Money Podcast. I'm your host, Nina Xiang. Our guest today is Bing Ling, Portfolio Manager at Keywise Capital Management. Bing Ling previously worked at Joho Capital, a New York-based Asia-focused hedge fund, and also State Street Global Advisors. Bing Ling today is talking to me in Hong Kong. Hi, Bing. Welcome.
Thank you.
So let's first start with the news. Last week, China announced plans to launch a Shanghai-Hong Kong Stock Connect pilot program in about 6 months. So that will allow Chinese investors to buy and trade Hong Kong listed shares, as well for Hong Kong investors or global investors to get access to local domestic Chinese shares. How does this impact hedge funds who's investing in the Greater China region?
Well, in general, I think it's a good news because it kind of brings balancing act among those two markets. We are going to see among the larger cap, the valuation gap among those two markets are going to be decreased. And also, I think for some small and mid-cap companies listed in overseas market in Hong Kong, I think they actually will, there will be some re-rating for those companies. And at the same time, I think there might be some minor, there will be some negative impact for the small mid-cap companies in China, listed in China, because of the high valuation. And the previous day, investing in China, they don't have too many alternative way to invest their capital. So those, a lot of those names, mid-cap, small-cap names in China, in my view, have been overvalued.
So you just mentioned that this program is going to lower the valuation gap between Shanghai and Hong Kong.
Yes.
And we do see that the Hang Seng China AH Premium Index, which is the index that measures the valuation gap between the two stock exchanges, rose to 95% almost on the news, closer to the 100% 100 level that signals parity between Shanghai and Hong Kong.
Yeah.
So the program is going to be launched officially in about 6 months' time.
Yes.
What kind of trading opportunities do you think this provides?
Well, yes, for hedge funds, we are looking at, if we compare like ANH discount premium, we are trying to buy discount names regardless which market they are, either in A or H. That's a trade we are playing. And then also for some small mid-cap names in Hong Kong, high-quality names, which in China, previous day, the investor don't have access to, we are also putting more capital into that space.
So this is a rather short-term trade, right? Or you think it's going to take a longer time because it's not going to immediately close the valuation gap?
Well, first of all, we are not buying anything. We are buying high quality names. We are buying them at reasonable valuation, at low valuation. We think the current regulatory change is additional catalyst for the value to be unrealized, to be realized. Whether it's a long term or short term, it depending on valuation. If it takes longer time to realize the value, we will be happy to be patient investor and wait for the investment to play out.
So now let's look at the broader Chinese stock market.
Yeah.
The Chinese stock market has been among the worst performing around the world. For the past 4 years, the Shanghai Stock Exchange Composite Index dropped about 33%, and during the same time, the S&P 500 increased about 54%. So why do you think Chinese stock market has been performing so miserably?
Right. I think there are a couple major reasons, in my view. First of all, I think because of the interest rate liberalization, in general, investors, their own risk-free rate has been going up. Right now, investors can get risk-free return through wealth management product and realize much better interest rate than before. And as you know, interest-free rate has a major impact on valuation. So currently, the trend is the interest-free rate is much higher than the official interest-free rate. I think that has a major impact on the overall market.
So basically, you're saying that capital has been drawn towards the other higher-yielding asset class, such as trust products or wealth management products, so the capital is not going to the stock market.
In a way, yes. The alternative, like more risk-free yield return asset, actually has become more attractive than before. So that's why I think some capital have been drawn to those investment products. But that's one aspect. The other aspect, as we all know, the Chinese financial sectors right now have massive structure issues. For example, the banking sectors, right? The NPL has not been cleaned up. And then the shadow banking will add more bad debt to the whole system. And the insurance industry also has structural issues because in China, a majority of insurance products are sold as an investment product, not as a protection product, right? And then also the real estate, we all know right now, there's a massive oversupply, especially in second, third, or fourth tier cities. Those major sectors right now has massive structural issues. And that's why you are seeing the index, which are heavily geared toward those sectors, it's not performing. But on the other hand, I have to point out that in the Chinese small medium enterprise index, you know, like the Jumbo in China, they actually has been performing quite well. You know, I think last year the Chinese Jumbo was one of the best performing index globally. I think investors in China also, I think they see through the structure issue among those major financial sectors, and then they would rather put their capital into some younger, more entrepreneurship companies.
But you were saying under the Shanghai Hong Kong Stock Connect program, you see small and medium cap stocks actually going to be under pressure.
Yes. If you compare, for example, Hong Kong listed small and medium companies versus the mainland listed small and medium companies, the valuation gap just so big. In Hong Kong market, we saw a lot of small and medium companies which they are generating earning growth about 20 or 30% year over year. But oftentimes they are traded at almost single digit multiples. The reason is that, first of all, there's a very little coverage on those companies. And the foreign funds, they tend to invest in only large cap companies, like, you know, Fidelity, Capital, they are large hedge funds, they tend to invest in the biggest name. And then also the Hong Kong local investors, they have a tendency to invest in large cap names or index names also through Warren. And there's a lot of overlooked small, medium cap companies who nobody kind of care about. And the situation in China is totally different because of, if you look at the Chinese listed name, even they are small mid-cap, but investor they like those names, they like to trade those names. And they, as long as the company can generate reasonable growth, investors are willing to pay 30 or 40 or even higher multiples.
So that's quite a gap between single-digit multiples,
yeah.
And 30 to 40.
Now, I'm seeing a lot of Chinese, China-based investors right now, they become more active in Hong Kong. They come here to set up office. They become more interested in those names. Because in terms of research, then there are no major difference because those names, their headquarters are in China. They are doing Chinese business. So in terms of research, there's no major difference. But in the past, due to lack of a catalyst, it kind of become those mid-cap, small-cap names in Hong Kong become a sleepy area. I bet there will be more activity in those space.
So basically, you see the Hong Kong listed small and medium cap stocks possibly have see their valuation go up, and also the domestic Chinese small and medium,
yes,
cap stocks dropping their valuation a little bit.
As in general,
okay.
But
so now let's look at the broader market again. The Shanghai Composite Right now, the valuation is, for the whole market on average, is very low. It's about 7.6 times 12 months projected earnings. That's compared with a five-year average multiple of about 12.1 times. So do you see the market improving going forward? Does this mean that the market generally is undervalued?
In general, right now, as you know, the Chinese internal macro picture is weak. Under this kind of environment, yes, the overall market is undervalued.
So you do think the market, in terms of valuation, is going to improve going forward? Or you think it's going to be depressed for a while?
It's hard to put a duration period for when the market will be related to historical average. But all I can say is currently the level is low. And as a value investor, we have the patience to invest and then wait for the stock to be re-rated.
Okay. If you do think that the market is going to improve in general, what are some catalysts that you see will drive up performance?
I think for me, the major structural issues, as I mentioned, in the Chinese financial sector would be sooner or later, those structural issues have to be addressed. That process will be, I think, a good catalyst for the stock to be re-rated. Like, for example, the NPL issues in the banking sector and also the shadow banking sector, we are seeing the Chinese bank are aggressively writing off their bad debt. The shadow banking right now, it's in a way, it's incorporated into the official banking balance sheet. The insurance companies right now are turned more constructive in terms of selling a high margin protection product than before. They realize that the investment product does not have high margin and it's not good for the long term. And the real estate companies right now also facing some washout among the industry. They have to eventually clean up the inventory and provide the product people really want. And then I think the process right now is underway. Like, for example, interest rate liberalization, in a way, it's a good solution to current issues.
With central banks around the world printing unprecedented amounts of paper money, maybe it's time to consider investing in gold and silver again. Visit goldsilver.com by clicking on their banner on chinamoneynetwork.com. You can learn everything about investing in gold and silver, place an order to buy the precious metal, or incorporate your investments into your IRA account. Goldsilver.com can also physically store your gold and silver, ship them for you to over 40 countries around the world. Click the gold and silver banner on chinamoneynetwork.com. Are you a pro trader who needs all the professional trading tools right at your hands? Options, shorting, leverage, lightning fast execution? Then shorttrader.com is the answer for you. Trade up to 1,000 shares for only $4.95 per trade. Pay only $1 per option contract. Get 6-to-1 intraday or 2-to-1 overnight leverage on marginable securities above $3 with a $500 account minimum. Short Trader also offers you the largest shortlist, and you can send orders instantly and use real-time market prices. Click on shorttrader.com's banner on chinamoneynetwork.com and sign up for your account and start trading like a pro.
Now let's move on to Keywise Capital.
Yeah.
Give us a brief introduction of the firm.
Keywise Capital is a Hong Kong-based hedge fund. We currently manage about $1.4 billion. We are mainly managing money for Western institutions. Our strategy is long-short equity. Typically, we buy high-quality name at a reasonable price. And we shorting names which with a broken business model or with accounting fraud. We are focusing on Greater China region But in terms of technology sector, we have some investment in Japan, Korea. But it's mainly because of the technology sector, it's more global. You cannot isolate the technology sector within the Chinese, the China region only.
So here, I'd like to just read you a paragraph written recently about your firm by a former colleague of mine and a friend, Alan Chen at Institutional Investor Magazine. He wrote a great article about Chinese hedge fund and how the hedge fund sector is going to take off in the future. And your firm was one of the example that Alan used in his story. And I find this very interesting. So I'll first read it and then I'll ask you the question. In November 2012, hedge fund manager Fang Zheng began looking into China metal recycling holdings after hearing rumors of questionable financial practices at the company, a Chinese scrap metal recycling outfit. Within weeks, Zhang and his team of researchers at Keywise Capital Management concluded that there was substance to the talk. He began shorting the Hong Kong listed stock between December 2012 and early January 2013, even as other investors were piling in, bidding up the share price by 26% to a high of $10.30 Hong Kong dollars on January 11th. The shares sagged over the next 2 weeks on rumors that regulators had begun an investigation before the company suspended trading at 9.43 Hong Kong dollars. In July, the Securities and Future Commission of Hong Kong won a court order to wind up China metal recycling after citing evidence that the company inflated revenues ahead of its 200 million initial public offerings in 2009. So this would be an example of a short position and also the investment process that you go through to go into a short position. This is based on fraud. We have seen a lot of similar cases for Chinese companies. Do you see there's still more such opportunities?
Well, I was trained as an accounting before I became an investment profession. I had 2 degrees in accounting, and I was a CPA for Ernst & Young for 3 years. Our firm actually has been engaging some very good forensic accountants to do some detailed forensic accounting work as well, such as we hired Dr. Howard Schulett, who initially identified Enron case in the U.S. and has written multiple books on forensic accounting analysis. Based on my work experience and my observation, I think there's still widespread accounting abuse among listed companies, even some large ones.
That hasn't been discovered.
That has not been discovered. There's no strong forces right now in Asia in general, as a hedge fund as a whole, to go against those companies. In the U.S., for example, you have company hedge fund like Pershing Square or Greenlight Capital. They're pretty aggressive in identifying issues and also go against those, make them public. But in Asia, due to culture issue, due to the regulatory framework, hedge fund here has been kind of very polite. They actually has not been aggressive in pursuing those opportunities. And I hope that I will be part of early members who are actually trying to push the changes, push people to push the investment community to think about corporate governance and also accounting issues in the market.
Well, this is very important because you think there are still even major Chinese companies that still have accounting issues that hasn't been discovered.
Yes, a lot of issues. There are multiple angles in terms of accounting issues. First of all, for example, revenue recognition. We're seeing some companies who basically, the business is an agency business. But because of they're trying to use some accounting loophole and book the revenue on a gross revenue basis, and that actually massively inflate the revenue by multiple times. We're also seeing, actually, there's another common practice in Asia, especially in Hong Kong market, is unfair related party transactions, such as acquisition. They're paying inflated amount to acquire some small business, and which is damaging to minority shareholding. And we're seeing also massive corporate government issue in terms of there's no segregation of duties, for example, among the chairman and the CEO. Oftentimes we're seeing the CEO and the chairman are the same person. And this person maybe already commit some violation in terms of maybe like inter-party lending. A lot of those kind of things happening in the market. But the bottom line is, we're seeing the Hong Kong stock exchange right now, in terms of independent director rule, they're still quite relaxed. For example, in the US, if you are listed in the main board, you are required to have majority of the board member as independent director. But in Hong Kong, the requirement is only one third. So that creates a major issue. In Hong Kong market also, there's no regulation on the class action lawsuit. So if you, as a minority shareholder, you still can sue the company. We saw some cases already going on. But then it's very costly. And then it's basically some small minority shareholder go against the whole company. In the U.S. rule, as a class action lawsuit, the lawyer basically step in. They actually will do the lawsuit for free. And they will charge some contingency fee if the lawsuit is successful. I think those rules actually help to clean up the system. The government needs to set up a much better framework for the minority shareholders to express their view, to basically enforce some changes on the LISCO.
You mentioned corporate governance issues, and I think that issue has a lot to do with culture, and we've seen also in Japan for years, you know, investors haven't made much progress in instigating change.
Yes.
But let's focus on the more specific trading process. If you do see that there are Chinese overseas listed companies that have accounting issues, but do you think because some of the practices are so widespread that even if you point out their questionable accounting practices, your trades might not materialize?
Yes, shorting is a very difficult practice. It's not for everyone. And that's why in the market right now, you are not seeing too many hedge funds right now actively pursuing shorting investments. Because my original training at Joho, which was a very pure Tiger-style long-short equity fund, so I kind of learned a little bit more trick in terms of shorting the names. In general, you have to, first of all, facing your short investments, and then second of all, you have to have the guts. You have to have high conviction on the stock. And you have to have a strong belief that for companies who utilize accounting strategy to maximize short-term profit, for the longer term, the issue will come out eventually. It's very hard to time the market. It's sometimes it's helpful if the market start to realize the issue, but sometimes you know if you are just early, you might be just too early. I think the key is to kind of keep a pace on the investment, maybe initially putting a small position at the beginning and monitor those positions and then adding on, average up your cost base for the short position, which will be much better than just put everything in on the spot.
Let's go back to the example of China Metal Recycling Holdings. So after you build up your short position, did you do anything?
We're very passive. We're very passive on the position. We believe at the time the major finding we had is the company inflates its revenue so massively, and the number does not add up. And then we interviewed the company management team, and we didn't trust the management at all. So we build a position and we just wait passively.
You didn't do anything. You didn't communicate with other major investors. You didn't try to tell other people, you know, this is what I found.
We didn't do much because of compliance issues. But on the other hand, for some other issues, we did try to communicate openly with management team. There's another company we shorted. There's the CEO and the chairman basically are the same person. And he actually have some undisclosed lendings from the main company, and it actually was found out by the stock exchange. In that case, we actually openly go to the company meetings and openly argue that the company should think about segregated duty among the chairman and CEO. And I feel more comfortable doing this kind of thing rather than we build a position and then we go to market and disclose the position because there's some regulatory limitation on how much we can do once we build a position.
Okay. In terms of shorting opportunities going forward, where do you see great opportunities in shorting aside from accounting fraud?
Aside from accounting fraud, there's a lot of business models right now are turning obsolete, either by mobile internet or by some new entrepreneurs. And we are still seeing massive opportunity there. Like, for example, in the education sector, we are seeing the traditional offline business is being challenged by online business. The business model is online business is basically taking market share and profit from the offline business. Another interesting thing is we feel a lot of companies, they want the market to perceive they're doing something, but in reality, they're doing something else. And the devil is in the details. So by reading their filings extensively, we were able to identify areas where the company actually shift their focus. Like, for example, we have maybe a company come to market and raise money saying they were going to do one type of investment. But then in reality, actually, they turn around, use the money to channel into a real estate sector. And that's actually an area we feel it's quite interesting because of not every investor kind of pay attention to those kind of small prints or small changes. But if you are early enough, you're able to identify those companies and short them because of the price that people tend to pay for the better part of business tend to be higher than the worst part of business. If a company shifts their focus into the worst part of business, they should deserve much lower price, and that's where we can add value. I do feel that a lot of investors, they should have read the report, any report more closely, but it takes a lot of time.
Okay, so that's for the short side. For the long side, the five biggest holdings Keywise has is some technology stocks, including VIP Shop, Qihoo 360, YY, AutoNavi. Those are your top holdings. A lot of Chinese technology stocks.
Well, first of all, most of them are not our top five positions because the reason is due to different disclosure requirement, also the market cap in different market. The name you mentioned are mainly ADRs. Most of them are not that big. But for a lot of Hong Kong names, the disclosure requirement is much higher. Even those names are our larger positions, you don't know about them.
Because you don't disclose, you're not required to disclose?
Yeah, no disclose.
So mostly they're like Hong Kong listed stocks?
Yeah.
Okay. So those will be your largest ADR, US listed holdings, okay.
But in general, I would say we tend to look at company from different angles. First of all, most importantly, we look at the people, the management behind the company, all the new management who come in the company to effect changes. This is actually the most important factor. The second thing is the context, the whole business context. Like, for example, mobile internet is changing the whole landscape. It's replacing a lot of industries. And that's the whole context we are talking about. And then the business model. We want to identify the companies who are running a viable business model, who is going to be profitable and scalable, and most importantly, the business has a strong moat, a very high barrier to entry. And lastly, it's valuation. We like to invest when the market is kind of weak or investors has some bias on those names. Like, for example, for the internet name you mentioned, we actually start to invest in those companies back in 2012. If you remember, actually, during 2010, 2012, there was strong negative bias toward Chinese ADRs, mainly because of a lot of fraudulent companies were being exposed to the public. And also there was huge uncertainty among investors toward the Chinese VIE structure. That actually create a perfect environment for us to enter, buy those names at reasonable price, and has generated good return for us last year.
You invested in those technology companies during like you say, from 2010 to 2012, when the Chinese overseas listed stocks really got hammered because of Carson Block and Muddy Waters, all those negative reports. What do you think about their valuation now? Do you think they're back to a more reasonable level?
Right now, actually, its valuation is much higher than before. And also some low quality name actually showed up even more than the high quality names last year. Right now, actually, we are seeing it's a perfect time for hedge funds because right now, actually, you are seeing investor is more back to the reality right now. One reason is some regulatory limitation on how much mobile internet can do, especially on the payment side. And the second is a lot of names actually are valuation just become excessive.
So you think it's a good time to short them?
We think buying high quality name and shorting low quality name at this stage, it makes tremendous sense. It's very different from last year where you're pretty much buying the sector, and then if you short many of them, you know, get hurt. This year, actually, you are seeing the other way, which actually is perfect for hedge fund, where you can hold on the high quality name and shorten low quality names.
Okay, so this is for ADRs for U.S. listed Chinese companies. So buying the high quality names and shorting the low quality names, which you see they're going to probably have some difficult time going forward this year. How about for Hong Kong market and also the Asia?
Well, we don't show AA in Asia. So for Hong Kong listed names, same thing, especially in certain sectors, such as in pharmaceutical sector, which was a good sector. And then we're also seeing very similar situation. It's a good time to buy high quality name and then also short low quality names.
So lastly, you talked about some successful cases, investments that you made. Can you give us one example where your investment thesis didn't play out and also the lessons learned?
Well, one of them, we actually still, we invest last year when it's a technology name. As I mentioned, in the technology space, we invest globally. We're not limited to China. So last year, we actually, at the end of last year, we started to invest in a company called BlackBerry. It's a turnaround story, and everyone was kind of very passive on the name. But we actually did extensive research on the name, and then we were very happy about the company bringing a strong management, a turnaround management, John Chen, who actually has a good track record in turning around Sybase. The company, even though they are losing money on the hardware side, they still have very strong asset in the software side, such as BBM, and also some automobile software, which are very valuable. And we actually, also they have strong patents. They have over thousands of patents, which are quite valuable. So the valuation we got on a conservative basis should be around, the company should be traded around over $8 billion US dollar. At the time when we entered the position, the company was traded around $3 billion US dollar. So we invest, and actually almost at the bottom of the sell down, and the stock actually shoot out around from 650 to about 10. And around that time, actually, we also heard very encouraging news that Third Point, Dan Lowe's Third Point hedge fund, also invests heavily in this name as well. And we actually hope, as an active investor, Dan Lowe will help us to realize the value of the stock. But recently, the company actually announced the result. we're seeing some shrink in revenue, which is understandable because the company is trying to conserve the cash. And the company actually turned positive recently. The result was good, but because of the whole market environment right now, they also have major sell down. So right now the price is around the entry level. We have not making too much money from that position. But you know, as a value investor, patience is something we actually have as an advantage over the market. So we're still holding on the position. We think we have strong faith on John Chen. And we also think active investors like Dan Lowe eventually will step in, just like what he did at Yahoo, to help the company to realize value for shareholders. So that's one position we have, which has not realized much profit for us, but we are still happy to hold them.
Okay, but still, we don't know the end of the story yet.
Not yet.
Okay.
So let's wait.
Well, great. Thank you so much, Bing.
Thank you.